spirit? Does it stay? Does it go?
The fact is, spirit does survive death. Our loved ones are all around us. Love survives. Spirit survives. All is not lost.
Welcome to the All Is Not Lost podcast. Here's your host, psychic and evidential medium, Rianne Maldonado.
As long as I can remember, I've always loved school. When I was young, school was a place where I felt I could thrive. My teachers loved me and always looked out for me. And pleasing my teachers by working hard and being organized brought me joy. I know, I sound like a total nerd. But doing well in school and having good relationships with my teachers filled a gap that was always nagging at me. At that time, I didn't yet understand why I felt so different and separate. So anything that made me feel included or special served a really important purpose. Even during the most stressful times in my life, I tried to find a way to go to school in some form, whether the community college, online courses, or classes with local teachers. For the majority of my 30s, when I was having all of my babies, I still felt a deep desire to learn and grow. Even though I wasn't able to leave my children and go to school full time, I found ways to keep learning. Recently, I decided that I wanted to pursue finishing my nursing degree, but I hit some roadblocks that I just can't overcome. At first, I was devastated and cried an entire day, but after sleeping it off, I woke up with a new attitude. I realized that nursing school is probably not what I'm supposed to be doing, regardless of the fact that I began nursing school 23 years ago and have never stopped thinking about it. I took some time to look around and assess my situation. I took stock of what my interests are these days and what are the things I'm pursuing that are feeding my soul. See, I've kept myself under this pressure for so long, thinking that regardless of all the things I've learned and interesting experiences I've had, that because they didn't lead to a degree or a high-paying career, they weren't worthy of feeling proud of. It was always in the back of my mind that I needed a degree in a field that would land me a well-paying job with benefits and a retirement plan, the ever-present societal or familial pressure. Well, they say God or the universe or whatever you want to call it knows better than we do what's best for us. And I believe this. You know the saying, let go and let God? Well, that's what I'm trying to do now. I'm trying to trust that everything that shows up in my path, no matter how out of the blue or different from what I thought I wanted, is in fact what I'm supposed to be doing. After feeling sorry for myself about nursing school, I have no idea how it happened or what led me to look it up, but I ended up in a rabbit hole of researching parapsychology online, which in turn led me to discover available parapsychology courses. The more I read, the more intrigued I became, and I just kept digging deeper until I landed upon a course that sounded perfect for me. A 12-week parapsychology course through Atlantic University online, which was founded by Edgar Cayce. Imagine that. I love the teachings of Edgar Cayce. And in 2019, I was blessed with the opportunity to go to the ARE for a psychic development weekend. That was really amazing. To be completely honest, I really did not know exactly what parapsychology meant. I mean, I had a notion, but until this class, I tell you right now, I truly did not understand what academic parapsychology actually is. So before I get into what parapsychology is and isn't, and why it's important or at least fascinating, I would like to consider for a minute that I was led to this class for a reason. Let's start with the fact that I work as a psychic medium and have been studying mediumship since 2015. I host a spiritual/paranormal podcast. I teach people about intuition and mediumship. I'm a Reiki master and more. I mean, if you add all of that up, just about everything I love to do, every minute I'm not spending doing normal life stuff, I'm spending in the realm of spirit. It seems that it would make sense to lead me to a new, very different, and more academic angle of a similar type of work, right? Being the overachiever that I am, I applied to the college, wrote the entrance essay, and purchased the texts right away. Before I knew it, I was attending the orientation interview and learning my way around the online classroom. Mind you, this all happened the last week of December, with class officially starting on January 2nd. In the 2 weeks since class began, I have learned so much. Oh my goodness, I had no idea what I was actually going to learn. I realized I didn't really know what parapsychology was, which on one hand might disappoint someone, but for me, I felt like it was a blessing that I didn't even know I needed. Side note here, I want to make it very, very clear that I am not a parapsychologist, and I'm not trying to represent myself as one in any way. I would also like to make it very clear that I am a very new student of parapsychology, but have found it immediately so exciting that I wanted to share my limited knowledge with you. All of the information I'm going to share with you has been introduced to me from my professor's own books and my textbooks. I am not sharing information that is only accessible through the paid course at Atlantic University, as that would be inappropriate. However, I will put links to my textbooks and other parapsychology websites in the show notes if you would like to investigate further. Let's begin with this. Parapsychology is not the study of UFOs, Bigfoot, Nessie, ETs, etc. This isn't to say they exist or don't exist, just that academic parapsychology does not include studying these things. So, what is parapsychology? And what do parapsychologists study? It's simple. Well, haha, not really. But it can be boiled down to three terms. ESP, or what is commonly known as extrasensory perception, psychokinesis, or PK, think of the show Stranger Things here, and what probably drew me to this research the most, survival of bodily death. These are the things that parapsychologists study. Now, under each category is a list of fascinating subcategories, which I will go into briefly for you. According to my professor, Lloyd Auerbach, in his book, ESP, Hauntings, and Poltergeists, parapsychology deals with phenomena that cannot currently be explained by known laws. We are studying the how and why of these interesting things that happen, not if they happen. Much of the research about whether these things exist or not has already been done. So the focus of studying them now is to figure out why and how these things occur. In fact, it was very interesting to me to listen to a lecture by Dean Radin, where he showed that statistically, there's far more evidence to support psychic phenomena than there is that aspirin prevents second heart attacks. Let that sink in for just a minute. I'm going to very briefly talk about ESP, PK, and survival of bodily death with some of the applicable subcategories. But what I hope you take away from this is that some of the definitions and or what categories some familiar things fall under may in fact be new to you as they were to me. And again, in case you'd like to investigate further on your own, I will put links in the show notes. Let's begin with ESP, commonly known as extrasensory perception, but now better known as extended sensory perception. This is referred to as receptive or informational, since the person is usually receiving information. ESP includes telepathy, which is, quote, awareness of information or emotions that exist in the mind of another, or mind-to-mind communication, end quote. Clairvoyance, or clairseeing, this is the receiving of visual information, but all of the clairs can be placed into this category, clairaudience, clairsentience, and so on, which I've touched on in other episodes. Under clairvoyance, there can be subcategories, such as psychometry or hauntings, which some refer to as place memory. With psychometry, a person holds an object belonging to someone else and perceives information from the item, possibly the history of the item and information about the owner or previous owner of the item. Hauntings fall under this category, possibly because, let's say, a house's history and past occupants are seen clairvoyantly. You could say that the psychic or person receiving the information about the house is using the same skill, sense, or whatever it may be to perceive information from the home, again, such as its history, previous occupants, etc. This is why hauntings can also be called place memory. Lastly, remote viewing can be placed in the clairvoyant category as well. I've recently done an episode on remote viewing, which is also known as remote perception or anomalous cognition. This is information received from other locations in space and time, often on a larger scale. ESP also covers precognition, knowing information before it happens. This seems common sense and is a bit of a side note, but to better prove precognitive impressions, it is suggested that the moment a person receives some information that they think may have meaning beyond the ordinary, to write it down and or tell someone else. This way, if the information turns out to be accurate later on, you can have a record of your precognitive experience. This happens to me frequently, mostly in ways that don't really matter, but are interesting nonetheless. Recently, I had a precognitive dream. It didn't really help me solve anything or predict anything, but it was still very interesting, especially to my husband and one of his private investigation cases. I won't share the name for confidentiality reasons, but I really wish I could. I woke up one morning from the most vivid dream ever about a very specific male TV actor with an extremely unusual name, especially for a man. In the dream, we were walking on a beach and talking about life and all kinds of interesting things. The dream was so real that the moment I woke up, I quickly searched his name, wondering if he had been injured or was in the news for some reason, but I couldn't find anything. As soon as my husband woke up, I told him about the dream and asked him to keep an eye out for any news about this person. Well, nothing came about the actor, but strangely enough, later that day, I overheard my husband on the phone. And I heard him ask, "What was the detective's name? And is that a male?" I was like, "You have got to be kidding me." The minute he got off the phone, I asked him about it. And he said that he was being referred to a detective with the same name as the actor in my dream, because this man was the only one to have the detailed report of the suicide case my husband was working on. Never in my life had I personally known a man with this name. And not 5 hours after I dream about him, a man with this name, my husband is being transferred on the phone to the only person with the needed information who just happened to have the same name. Who knows why this happened? And did it end up having much meaning? I don't know, other than possibly confirming that my husband had been put in contact with the correct person who would help him solve his case. Either way, I thought it was pretty interesting. Okay. So if you remember, all of the phenomena I've touched on so far falls under ESP and is mainly considered receptive. The next topic I want to share with you is PK, or psychokinesis, which can be explained in simple terms as mind over matter. And this area is more expressive in nature. According to Auerbach, quote, "true mind over matter, or that ability to move objects from a distance," end quote. Okay, crazy, right? This includes cases of levitation, floating or flying across a room, and what many of us have heard of as spoon or key bending. It blew my mind to learn that these things have been studied and in a laboratory setting nonetheless. These things have always fascinated me, but honestly, I wasn't sure if there was actual truth to them. But now I'm amazed at not only are they real, but that they can be studied. How exciting is that? PK can be divided into macro and micro events. Macro can be seen, like levitation, metal bending, and even materialization or dematerialization. Micro PK are, quote, "more sophisticated than the naked eye," end quote, in instances such as influencing a computer system. If you've had the chance to listen to some of my previous episodes where I talk about the haunted house I lived in Spokane, Washington, you might have heard me mention my keys disappearing or the baby monitor on the wall moving on its own. If you would like to check out those episodes, I'll put links in the notes. Lastly, still under the category of PK, we can include poltergeist activity, sounds, things moving or breaking on their own, and sometimes vague forms moving about. However, researchers seem to have come to the conclusion that these activities are actually a manifestation of stress in living people, not some unknown entity. Now, for survival of bodily death, near and dear to my heart already, but now also important to me in a more academic light. This is, quote, the concept that some part or all of human consciousness survives the death of the physical body and somehow retains its intelligence and generally its personality, end quote. Okay, under here we have apparitions. We think of apparitions as ghosts. What is of concern here is two parts. One, consciousness must survive, and two, it must be able to communicate with living people. Apparitions can be seen, heard, felt, or smelt. Apparitions are different from hauntings because apparitions are intelligent and able to communicate, whereas hauntings, remember, are basically experiencing place memory. Now, of course, there could be apparitions that you are communicating with in a location that you are perceiving information from. So therefore, a haunted place. So you could be communicating with a ghost, but also getting information from a location in which you are spending that time. There could be more than one thing going on there. This is where mediumship comes in, both mental and physical. Mental mediums like me communicate with spirits directly. Another form of this is channeling, where the medium allows the spirit to come into their body and speak through them. Physical mediumship would include not only communication, but also physical manifestations, such as table tilting, rappings, such as those heard by the Fox sisters in the late 1800s in Hydesville, New York, at the beginning of spiritualism. Still under the category of survival of bodily death and after apparitions or ghosts, we move on to mediumship, both mental and physical. Mental mediums, like me, communicate with spirits directly. Another form of mental mediumship is channeling, where the medium allows the spirit to come into their body and speak through them. There's also physical mediumship, which would include not only communication, but also physical manifestations. These could be table tilting or rappings, such as those heard by the Fox sisters in the late 1800s in Hydesville, New York, at the beginning of spiritualism. Possession, near-death experiences or NDEs, reincarnation, and out-of-body experiences are also discussed a bit, but for the purpose of this episode, I'm going to end with the apparitions and mediumship. As I said towards the beginning of this episode, prior to beginning this class, I realized now that I had no real idea what the study of parapsychology was. I didn't realize what exactly was being studied or why. What made the cut and what didn't and why. I didn't realize the history of the study of psychic phenomena was so important as well. Who began studying it in the first place and with what intention versus who studies it now and their intention. Parapsychologists struggle to be treated as relevant scientists. They face taboos and ridicule no matter how educated or reputable they are. Sadly, even with mountains of evidence that these things occur and can be replicated in laboratory settings, parapsychologists are not taken seriously. Sadly, TV and social media don't help either. TV and social media present parapsychology almost completely inaccurately, furthering the misinformation that causes the ridicule of the true scientists who are trying to bring legitimacy to the field. Today, like many parapsychologists, many of us are afraid to admit our interest in psychic phenomena for fear of rejection or ridicule. I know I myself used to feel similarly. It's only been within the past few years that I've become unafraid to admit that I work as a professional psychic medium. Early on, I would downplay my abilities and use words like intuitive versus psychic. I was pleasantly surprised to learn that, like me and most of my mentors, many parapsychologists believe we are all born psychic, and that we lose that ability over time. Mainly, it is believed that children are still very psychic and experience phenomena frequently. But over time, whether it's our parents, teachers, peers, or society, we lose our abilities due to others' reactions and comments. We hear that our imaginations are too vivid, or we're too sensitive, or to stop making things up. A As we get even older, we realize that our interests in this area may have an effect on the jobs we get or social circles we hang out in. So we bury it down deep or abandon it altogether. I would bet that almost every single person listening to this episode today has had at least one psychic experience in their lifetime, if not many more. And further, I would bet that many are too embarrassed to admit it to most of their friends, family, and maybe even coworkers. Again, like you, many academically trained parapsychologists feel the same way. They keep their work on the down low. I find this very sad for all of us. Wouldn't life be so much more exciting if we all embraced our psychic sides? Don't you think that we might live a more fulfilling life if we followed our intuition or psychic nudges more often, which just might possibly help us live life in a more peaceful flow instead of always fighting upstream? I don't know, just my thoughts on the subject. I know that since I've embraced and begun developing my psychic abilities more, I'm living a more conscious life. I know, as I said in the beginning of this episode, that because I'm living in this manner now, I can trust that where I'm being led is where I'm meant to be. Whether it's God or some pretty kick-ass spirits offering up cool ideas along the way, I'm happy they are, and I'm happy that I'm paying way more attention to their messages. I invite you today to do a bit of homework, just two simple tasks. First, I invite you to get out a notebook and a pen, or open a document on your computer, and when you have a quiet, peaceful moment, look back over your life and write down any experiences that you either believe were psychic or may have been psychic. You don't have to show this to anyone, so please don't edit it. This is for you to reflect back on when you may have experienced nudges from somewhere beyond yourself. The second piece of homework is to use another part of the notebook or another document on your computer to begin keeping track of psychic experiences or nudges that occur from now on. You could even save these as a note on your phone somewhere just as easily, since no one is ever without their phone. I encourage you to write down anything, even remotely psychic, a premonition, a telepathic incident, a dream that stuck to you as different. Write down anything that happens to you that may be a psychic experience. With this homework, my hope is that you will get back into contact with your psychic side and the deeper connection you have with your psychic side. My hope is that you'll feel more comfortable in your own skin, that you will live a conscious existence, and that maybe you just might find a bit more magic in your life. And with that, I'd like to say thank you again so much for being here this week. I hope you enjoyed the episode and maybe even learned something new. Maybe even sparked your interest in digging deeper yourself into the fascinating science of academic parapsychology. As a regular part of this show, I strive to bring you interesting topics and dynamic guests. If you'd like to be a guest or suggest a topic, please reach out through our email or social media accounts and let us know. Before you go, please ensure you're subscribed to the podcast so you don't miss out on any new episodes to come. And tell a friend. New episodes are published every Thursday morning at 3 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thank you again for joining me today, and I'll see you next week.